I guess all I have to do is hit record.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my name is Deb, and I am an addict.
Hey, Deb.
too funny. At any rate, I have done this work as it is laid out in the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous with my big book step study sponsor and a loving God, and I am working on my amends, willing to make them all, and I'm doing my very best to live in steps 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis, and I'm grateful to be here today and see all of you. Step three is one of those steps where the dimensions that are involved in it are so, there are so many layers that when you first start out, or at least when this person first started out in recovery, I could only get the tiniest amount of it. I can remember when I sort of figured that there was a phrase I used when I first got sober, and it was, do the next right thing. And that's about all I could remember. It was don't drink and do the next right thing. But the do the next right thing, when I first started in sobriety, was do the next right thing according to the book of Deb. Deb's will, Deb's needs, Deb's willpower, Deb will manage it. Deb can handle it. Not to worry. She's got it. She'll write it. She'll do the steps. And it was very interesting to go through this process again and again and again and come around to the point that it wasn't about doing the next right thing. A friend of mine at another meeting the other night said that his phrase is, what I've decided to do is just ask God what he wants me to do whenever I come in any part of the day. And that's very much more in keeping, I think, with what this step is about. The first two steps, as we all know from having done this reading and writing, most of us, are that we know that it's about basically accepting some truths about our condition, that we are addicts, that we cannot manage our lives, and then that next part about agreeing that we might be able to find a higher power that would be able to help us, that we're beyond the help of humanity. This third step really starts off with that process of having to make a it talks about action, but a decision, and I think a decision and sometimes is an action because a decision really sets you up for that next part. And I think one of the things that was different about doing this step in Big Book Step Study for me was that question from my sponsor about now are you, as you set out on this writing, are you now willing, it was sort of almost like taking a wedding vow, are you now willing to do the real deed, to go ahead and to sponsor people and to be present? And it was like, I said yes, because I wanted to get on with it. I wanted what she had. I wanted what all of you had. And in looking back, I go, that was a pretty serious promise. And that's, I think, what step three is about. It's about being willing to look at our lives as our own but not our own and being directed by other parts. So, if you look at this, the first two pages, couldn't we all just recite that pretty much? If you've been in enough 12-step promises, rarely have we ever seen a person fail who has not, thoroughly followed our path. And, the words that are etched in our mind that just are there and shape the way we look at things. But that process where we come to the, I think on page 60, it talks about being convinced. So we've sort of made the acceptance that we can't do it, we think that God can, and we're going to let God do that for us. I can remember a lot of early discussions of people about, if I turn my will over, what am I going to be? Who am I going to be? Am I going to be myself? And that paradox of in allowing our lives to be directed by the higher power that we each have acknowledged is not that we're giving up our powers, but we're finding new freedom. And I think that was the paradox it took me a while to see. I got it that I had to submit, I had to surrender, and in those things there were freedom. And I think what I've come to understand the 12 steps are is each one of these is a step to freedom. A step to freedom from my own self-will, my own self, my own self-desires, and as has been said by other people here, from the disease of self, which is really, I'm going to run my life the way I want to. If I look at this, I think some of the things that I think about, I was going back over the 12 and 12 also in thinking about this, and they talk about the willingness, just the willingness as being that key, and that in the step before and step two, it talks about being willing to open the door a crack, and then the rest of it comes in. And that is that process of, if we just put the key in the lock, the door will open itself. It's that process that higher power God was never gone. We're the ones that moved away from it. And the concept that with the willingness that we unlock that door, then the light comes in. And as long as I'm trying to keep the door closed or don't know that I can open the door, don't know that I can open that door to spirituality, then it's the light can't come in. And that process of accepting God as the higher power and turning our life and our will over to that is really a process of going, I want that light. I want that feeling of presence to be present all the time. I found my biggest barrier to this, and I didn't know it. That's the thing that I had to find out by doing the fourth step, was how much I was in my own way. One of my other phrases when I first came into 12 step was, Deb, get out of your own way. And I didn't understand how powerful that was in terms of the third step, because oftentimes my machinations were churning things up and they were making things worse, and I was just like the actor. I bet every one of us sometimes can identify with that. And I think one of the things I couldn't identify with earlier, but as I've redone this work again and done it in different ways, what I've come to understand is that we don't understand that our motives are good, so we can't see the rest. And again, I think it's been talked about here before. If you have good motives, you think everything else is good. At least that's the way I thought. I don't know if I'm alone in that. But I thought, well, if I was trying to do the best for you, then, well, why weren't you grateful and why wasn't it going right? I was that director on the stage thinking, I have good motives. I want the play to come off well. So do what I say. Cooperate with me. Instead, what I found out what my job is not to get other people to cooperate with me, but for me to perhaps cooperate with God. And that was a huge crossing over point for me, that sense that it wasn't about what I could accomplish. It was about allowing myself to, if not take the lead, but to cooperate with God. Before I even came into the program, I realized now I had a very powerful example of that, in the sense that, and the principle is, when I am doing God's will, everything is provided. That's what it talks about after this. You know, when we're willing to put God as the first part of our life, and that turning our life and our will over to that, then what happens is that everything is provided that we need. And there are times when I felt truly in lack, like I didn't have what I needed. There are times when money was tight. There were times when life was difficult, when my daughter was sick, when I was having problems, when I had a boss that I didn't like. And when I was in my addictions, I couldn't see all of the examples of when things were actually being provided. And the one example I've come to understand after the fact was what happened when I adopted my daughter. I adopted my daughter from Russia when she was 3.5 years old. And she had been in an orphanage for 3.5 years. So she came with many, many issues. Let's just put it that way. And I was a single parent, and I had always wanted to have a child. And I decided that I was going to do this. I was on my own. I had been divorced. I had not had children. I had not been able to get pregnant. And I decided the most important thing to me, and I think I was about 40 years old. I was 42 when I decided. A little bit late in the game, but I decided. I said, you know, I really want the experience of being a parent. And so I started the wheels in motion, and it started off with the fact that the moment I decided until the moment that she became my daughter was 9 months. So it was my paper pregnancy. And, you know, in other words, if that was the first signal. The next signal was that She did this thing with her toes. She would like play piano with her toes, just like my grandmother did. You know, and I'm not looking for explanations, but more importantly, the sense that I got was, as I went on, was I knew she had many problems. Let's just put it this way: many problems. There was abuse. There was all sorts of stuff that was going on. Plus, she had her own issues from having been in an orphanage and her developmental issues and so on. And what happened is, and I didn't even understand it as it was happening, is everything I needed for her was provided. I lived in Pennsylvania at the time, and when I lived in Pennsylvania, they had what was called wraparound services, so that the county would provide Medicaid for her, send a therapist to my home to do therapy with her every week on a weekly basis, and a psychologist who would see her every 3 months and support her in school. And it was the beginning of and they also provided paying for the occupational therapy she needed because she'd never been touched. So she had no concept of what being touched was like, and we had to do brushing and all this other stuff. And you know, I was just doing what they told me. But the thing is that with the wraparound service, I didn't have to pay for it. So I had thousands and thousands of dollars of therapy provided for her that allowed her to become a human being. Then I took this job at Nemours, which in many ways was not the right decision. However, I now know what the reason was. I look back, and when I started work at Nemours, which is a pediatric clinic, just so that you know, it's an outpatient pediatric clinic, they made a commitment to all of their employees that if they were in the business of pediatric care, they would provide all health care services for the children of the dependents of employees at 100% cost coverage, which was amazing. I didn't think about it, but she needed multiple hospitalizations when she got here. As she went into puberty, she started having flashbacks and memories, and she was suicidal, and she was in the hospital a few times for that. So, and I look back at that, and literally the year that I left Nemours, they stopped that program. So yeah, times are different, but I look at this and I look back now, and people go, how did you do this? How could you think you would do it alone? And the reality is I think it was about that concept that it was God's will that she be my daughter. Because I truly believe animals and pets and kids come to you the way they're supposed to. They come to us from the universe, we don't know why. Here they are, they're part of our plan. But she had multiple problems, and basically, everything I needed to take care of her was provided. That's what this step is about. When we get out of our way, then everything is provided for that. Recently, I've been going through this process of thinking about this job in Boston. It was very exciting at first, and it was all this, it would really be wonderful to get to do this. And what I realized in process of doing it, first of all, the first thing I did with this, like I'd never done before, because now I've crossed over. As I said to Isabel, I'm so glad I've crossed over before I think about this, because I've just put that over. I'm not even thinking about, do I want the job? I'm thinking about, what does God want me to do? What is God's will in my life? Am I supposed to go back there? Am I supposed to go up and do this job and do these other things? And it's been, somebody in the program said, you look so calm about this. She said, well, you know, is this for like for next year? I said, no, they'd want you to start in January, which anybody who owns a home and has a life and family, you know, that's a lot. But I'm totally at peace with that. And in my mind, that's living step three. That is the process of going, there is an opportunity, which I think I need to look at, but I don't know if it's the right one for me, but I don't have to decide. I don't have to make that decision right now. They may not even offer me the job. I don't know what's going to happen with that. I think they probably won't, but that's okay, because I've done the work that it says, you know what, no matter what happens, it's going to be the right one. So this concept of, you know, if you look at the bottom of 62, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Well, you know, I didn't think I was doing it. I think that's the other layer. It's like, you know, when you're stuck in your addictions, you don't see what you're really doing. At least I couldn't see what I was really doing. And all I could see was my motives and my righteousness. But this concept, the how and why of it, we had to quit playing God, it didn't work. And I think that was the key thing. I thought it worked. And I thought it worked really well. And I thought if everybody got out of my way, it would be just fine. But this concept of no, if I can align myself with God, the universe, higher power, whatever you want to call it, then things become happening in ways that it just can't happen any other way. And this is that sense of all sorts of remarkable things happen. I now look at my life, I look back, and I think about all these things that have happened, and I am so grateful. All of the things I've been through, I could look at all the hard stuff and go, oh my gosh, it's been quite something. And, you know, the one thing I could say is I have not been afraid to step out, and I have not been afraid to try things, because I now know I have been watched over every step of the way. Five, thank you very much. So when we look at these issues of turning it over, turning this process over to God, I think the hardest thing was realizing that there's greater freedom in having allowed my life to be run by God's will than it is the way I was doing it. And it's sort of like that concept of, as long as you're resisting, you're putting extra energy into it. And I look at that, it's like in relationships too. Working with my mom, you know, the more I resisted, the more she fought back, and you're going back and forth like this, but when I let it go, then all of a sudden the energy goes out of it and the flow begins again. And I really think that when we put our lives in the care of the God of our understanding, that's what happens. We are put back into the light. We are put back into the flow. What I saw in all of this also was about all the work we have to do, that, you know, getting ready for the step four. Talking about the fact that we now have to do the house cleaning of vigorous action, and so really it's a launching point. This step is the launching point into the writing, again all intimately related one to the other, and you know it's a powerful step. When I look at it the way I understood it in the past, it didn't have the power that it does now. It has the power now because I'm not trying to have the power. I'm not trying to run it anymore. Yeah, I do every now and then. There are times when I try to do it, but I much more often find myself going, you know, the phrase these days that a lot of people use is, not my circus, not my monkeys. You know, I like that one because it really helps me keep humor in it, but it also says, you know what, there's a boundary there. I'm not in charge. That's not mine to deal with. And my next challenge will be with my daughter because, again, she's getting ready to go out on her own. And parenting is a really good test of recovery, no matter what stage you're at, or any kind of, or even being a child to a parent who is aging. It just, again and again, the test is there, and I now ask, God, what do you want me to do? Who do you want me to be? And I let it go with that. So thanks for letting me share, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. If you're new to the meeting, please listen carefully. This type of meeting is highly structured. In order to speak at the meeting, you must have completed a fourth step, as it is laid out in the Big Book with the help of a Big Book step study sponsor, and currently be practicing steps 9, 10, 11, and 12. If you haven't done the steps this way or are not sure, please pass and check with the chairperson after the meeting. If you've done these steps as they're laid out in the Big Book, please share your experience with us. If you haven't, we ask that you be open-minded enough to listen. If you have a question pertaining to this step, please feel free to ask someone after the meeting. Group Conscience has voted a 5-minute limit